Welcome to this week's edition of the Dan Rayburn Podcast, the show that curates the streaming media industry news that matters most, unvarnished, unscripted, and providing you with the factual data you need to know without any of the hype. The pulse of the streaming media industry.
Welcome to the Dan Rayburn Podcast. I'm Dan Rayburn, along co-host Mark Donegan, and we are back after a little bit of a hiatus.
We are back.
Apologies to listeners there between my military trip and then getting sick with the flu, like everyone seems to have had. Put me down and out a bit, but we'll keep on a regular schedule here for the next 4 weeks leading up to the NAB Show Streaming Summit, which is pretty much done, Mark, as far as speakers and presentations. There's one or two more that I'm adding here or there, but I've announced a lot already in LinkedIn, and there's more promotion to come.
Yeah, it's an incredible lineup. So if the listeners have not checked it out, you need to.
Yeah, I'm super excited who we have, plus some of the fireside keynotes to get chairman of NBCU.
Yeah.
Matt Strauss is great. To get CTO of awesome. Paramount, Phil, like that's great. So B.A. Winston, Amazon, Prime Video, just some really great speakers who have a lot of depth and breadth across the industry in terms of knowledge and experience. So super excited for that. The AI track should be interesting. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about just, you know, there were some things we missed, Mark, while we were out, which I don't really think we have to cover from an earnings standpoint. But there were a few news pieces that were interesting when we were out. One that came out today is that Warner Bros. Discovery, just in time for March Madness, is offering a 40% off all yearly plans for Max when you prepay for a year.
Well, I'm going to take them up on that offer.
Yeah, well, you can. And one of the things to note is this applies to existing customers.
Yes, amazing.
Which is cool for someone like you, because so many times these deals are for only new customers or returning customers that haven't had a subscription over a period of time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's kind of a teaser to, you know, get new subscribers on the platform.
So if you want to take advantage, the lowest price plan here for a year is $5.83 a month.
Ton of value. Yeah.
So great for consumers, you know, bad for WBD in the sense that what do we keep talking about? Profitability. Yeah. I don't know how much money you're losing on $5.83 a month per sub, but
I'm going to take the discount very happily. Yeah, It's a good product.
Yeah, it is a good product. I do like the product. They have sports. Yeah. This is also the first time everything from March Madness will be on one platform with Max. Mm-hmm. In the press release they listed out that they sent today, just all of the different pieces of March Madness. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a basketball guy. I don't know March Madness. I couldn't probably come up with four college basketball teams if my life depended on it. Yeah. It's just not my sport. But the amount of content they're going to have, they talked about number of hours and then all these pre and post shows. And if you're into March Madness, that's the place to be.
Yeah, for sure.
So great for consumers. Another piece of news that came out just in the last, I think it was 2 days, is that Reliance is buying Paramount Global's 13% stake in Viacom 18. So they're going to spend $517 million, which is pretty amazing because they just finished striking that multi-billion-dollar deal with Disney.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about what's going to be taking place really in India, man, it's incredible how it's gone from multiple companies being in that region to one now dominating.
The one, yeah.
So Jio Cinema, which Viacom 18 operates along with dozens of TV channels, Reliance stake in Viacom 18 will now be just above 70% based on a regulatory filing they put out. So interesting to see that right on the heels of Disney merging its India business with Viacom 18. They announced that last month. So the new joint venture, just on the Disney side alone, is valued at $8.5 billion. Mm-hmm. So Reliance is the dominant force in that region.
Yes.
And will continue to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting to see how some of the streaming services, Mark, when they talked about international growth years ago and wanting to be in India, how they realize it's still important, but have, I think, understood the market better to come to the realization that the local incumbent here in that particular region holds and carries all the weight and all the power.
Yeah.
And we're really going to have to work with them build something with them as opposed to trying to compete with them.
Trying to compete, yeah.
Interesting lesson for Disney and some of the other companies. Let's go into the JV sports news that many have been talking about. Mm. And the reason here is that Fox's chief executive at a Morgan Stanley conference basically recently said that their internal expectations, quote, our internal expectations and what we've built our plans around are that within 5 years, we will have 5 million subscribers, which would be a very good business for us. So interesting here in that, for those that don't know, Fox, WB, and Disney do not actually have a contract in place amongst the companies for this JV streaming service. They have a term sheet, but they don't actually have a legal contract as of yet. That was news that had come out as of recently. So, interesting.
Yeah.
But second, I think it's odd that they're also being quoted that saying there's 50 million to 60 million households of cord cutters or cord nevers. Mm-hmm. And they believe that a very high percentage of them will be open to taking this new package. Hmm. Well, the problem here is they're setting unrealistic expectations of the size of the market, because just because somebody is a cord never or a cord cutter.
Yeah.
Okay. My mom doesn't mean they're interested in sports.
That's right. That's
so true. I don't understand how they look at the entire market and say, well, that's an opportunity in our TAM, total addressable market, is 100% of every household who doesn't have cable. It's not right.
Yeah, and isn't there a corollary here, Dan? Is that the whole issue that the cable companies, well, not the whole issue, a issue the cable companies had with like ESPN was that consumers started sort of rising up and going, wait a second, I'm paying for this, you know, and the numbers kept going, and I don't watch it. And yet, you know, like six or seven, or I think it got up to $8 or something of your $100, $110, $120 cable bill was going to ESPN, and I don't watch it. And I seem to remember, and maybe you recall more specifically, wasn't it roughly about 20 or 25% at the high end of cable households actually watched sports?
Oof, I don't remember that number.
Okay, so then nobody, somebody should go, you know, maybe go fact check me. But I think we're going to find, in other words, the point is, it wasn't like 75% of cable
households.
No, it was or not. Even
it
50.
Was below 50%.
Yeah, it was below 50%. And so, like, I don't understand that number either.
Well, but the corollary is interesting here, because they say, okay, this is Murdoch at Fox saying internal expectations is to have 5 million subs in 5 years. So if your market opportunity is 50 to 60 million households.
Oh, so that's 10%.
Why would it take 5 years to get that?
Oh, okay. Then you know what? I also kind of jumped. I thought they were saying that they believe that they could win 50 or 60 million.
No. That's a total addressable market.
That's total addressable market. Okay. Yes. And just forget what I just said.
Even 5 million over 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
If you're talking, let's just say you're getting a million a year.
Yeah.
That's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how much are they going to charge for, you know, you can kind of do the quick back of the napkin math and say, I mean, it's not an insignificant business, but I don't know if I would call that a very good business. I don't know. There must be something here we're missing, as I think we're really getting to.
I don't think we are. I think what's missing here is realistic expectations of what this could do in the market and the size and the opportunity, because at the same time, Murdoch then says, quote, what this bundle does is it puts a majority of sports into one bundle. It's an easy place for people to come to. If you're a sports fan and you don't get those sports already in a big bundle, this is absolutely a service you're going to be interested in. Well, first of all, factually, that's inaccurate, because it does not put the majority of sports into one bundle.
Exactly. No.
So how are you so disconnected? And you're talking about this at a Morgan Stanley Tech, Media, and Telecom Investor Conference.
And nobody challenged him? Well, maybe they did off
I didn't
off
see anybody
stage.
Write anything up, right?
Yeah.
Who knows off stage?
Yeah.
So thought that was interesting in terms of the comments.
Yeah, interesting.
We'll keep an eye on that. You know, we still just don't have any other details at this time. That said, I'm not surprised our industry is talking about it the way it is. I'd say people are more positive than negative towards it, but I would say right now everybody should just be neutral.
Yeah.
And it should be neutral because one, this is not a product that exists today. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's not working at scale. Until it does, until we see it, until we know what it does, like just it's too early to speculate on anything there.
Yeah.
Also, the whole regulatory issue, I don't think that's an issue there because I don't think technically FTC or DOJ, like we talked about before, I don't think they're breaking any laws there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that something doesn't happen based on the pressure that could be put on them. But I do believe the service will come to the market. Let's go into live real quick, Mark. Netflix is going to stream a live boxing match between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul on July 20th. That
when
should be.
Did Jake Paul suddenly become a worthy competitor or opponent of Mike Tyson? That's what I want to know.
You know, not that I follow boxing too much, but seeing what Jake Paul's done over the last couple of years, you know, he was basically seen as like, you know, this guy can't box. This guy's a goofball, right? And then he wins all these boxing matches.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, okay, you won against someone who's no name, but you couldn't win against this guy. And then he wins against him.
Mike Tyson
one, I get the sense that's more of a...
show business, right?
entertainment, maybe than boxing. But man, if you see Mike Tyson, you know, on TikToks and whatnot, just training for this... I don't care what anyone says about how old he is.
Right?
Like, you would not want to get hit by one of his punches.
He's still Mike Tyson.
Right. Like he'll still damage you. You'll have brain damage after one of those. So it's going to be interesting. I think a good portion of Netflix's viewers in whatever time zone it'll be in, because they have not announced the time as of yet, could potentially tune into this. So
Yeah.
I think it's super interesting. You know, some tying into this without going into any details, Netflix wanted to come to the streaming summit and do a presentation about some of what they're building out for live, but said, you know, we're going to have to pass this year because we have a lot to get done in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you how much they're preparing for this.
As
we've also mentioned in the past, that they continue to hire for the live events team and still positions open. So, you know, July will be here before you know it.
It will. Yeah.
But I think the time is key because let's say they end up doing this at, I didn't look at where it was taking place, but let's say it's Vegas and it's 9 p.m.
It's gotta be Vegas.
I would think so.
I mean,
but also I don't know the rules around fights and states and there's something to do with that. Right. But let's just say it's Vegas at 7. It's now 9 o'clock in the East Coast. It's now 2 a.m. in a lot of Europe. This is going to be regional, I think, once we get the time frame. Now, let's say they started even later. You could have even a smaller segment of the total Netflix population available to watch it. But even, let's just say it was New York. Let's just say it was U.S. Even if half or a third of their subscribers in the U.S. turned into this would be the largest live event in North America history.
Yeah.
It would break the Peacock number for Saturday football.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, it's in Texas, Arlington, Texas.
Oh, Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. July 20th at the AT&T Stadium.
Because they could sell a lot of tickets.
They're going to draw. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, Mike Tyson is twice his age, Jake Paul. Jake Paul's 27.
Sounds right.
And Tyson's 58, you know.
It's going to be interesting to watch, definitely.
Wow.
Let's jump into FUBU. We missed covering FUBU's earnings. FUBO. Make sure I say that right.
FUBO. Earnings. Get that right, FUBO. Dan.
Yep. I struggle with that.
I do,
let's just go through. So, they ended 2023 with 1.61 million subs.
Mm-hmm.
ARPU of $86.65. The issue here is they still had a net loss of $71 million.
Yeah.
So they're striving to get to positive cash flow, which is key. They ended the year with 158 FAST channels on their platform. That's how many they count. Full year 2024 guidance of 1.66 to 1.68 paid subs. So at the midpoint, that would be 4% growth year over year.
Yeah.
At the midpoint of revenue growth, it would be 13% if they hit their 2024 numbers. Mm-hmm. They ended 2023 with $251 million in cash equivalents, restricted cash, all the ways they report that. So
yeah,
they continue to get that net loss down. Their cash reserves are okay. They're not going to go under. Their stock is obviously extremely low.
Yeah,
but they did come out and said they still expect positive cash flow and adjusted EBITDA in 2025. So if they can get to that and they can keep their sub count up and growing even at 4%, they're okay financially. Mm-hmm. They're not going to have an issue there. The other thing that they recently announced was they did a deal for RSNs. What was the team that they announced? Mid-Atlantic Sports Network. Mm. So Baltimore Orioles and Washington Nationals. I thought that's cool because they continue to target RSNs, which are obviously super important.
Yeah.
For sports and baseball in particular. And the other thing, too, is for those that don't know, YouTube TV doesn't have MLB Network. Mm-hmm. So that gives Fubo a leg up as well. So that's the numbers from Fubo. Let's go into Disney here. Two things on Disney. Disney CEO came out at an event just in the last week, and he said, quote, "When we launched Disney Plus in 2009, mm-hmm. Sorry, let me start that again because that's not when they launched Disney Plus. Yeah. When we launched Disney Plus in 2019, our goal was to have basically robust video experiences at scale. Mm-hmm. What we didn't have was the technology that we needed to basically lower customer acquisition and retention costs, to increase engagement, and to essentially grow our margins by reducing marketing expenses." What he then says is he highlights that Netflix is the gold standard for what they have.
Yeah.
Right? So he basically comes out and says what we've known for a long time in the industry is that Netflix is super ahead of everyone when it comes to the scale of their tech stack, what they do to combat churn and retention. And Mark, you and I had this conversation when the podcast first started because shortly after Disney Plus rolled out, one of the things I mentioned was based on some information I'd had was that Disney at the time when they rolled it out was not building anything into the platform to track churn or retention. Mm. And if you signed up for Disney Plus and you watched only one video, for instance, and you got to 29 days before you're about to cancel, you didn't get an automated email. You didn't get anything telling you, hey, we noticed you watched this. Yeah. You should watch that to try and keep you.
Watch something else. Exactly.
The only thing Disney was looking at, I heard at the time, was if you have multiple profiles, chances are a lot lower that you're going to cancel because multiple people in the family are using the account. Mm. But there was really nothing they were doing to reduce their customer acquisition costs and to increase engagement and reduce the cost, as they call it, marketing expenses to grab viewers. So interesting, they now acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But also we have to remember at the time, and it's still the case today, that when you have Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, Hulu, Hulu Plus Live TV and Hulu Plus, you have multiple different platforms and they never got all their streaming D2C to a particular single platform. That also hurt them big time.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the priority.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't the priority, but is the priority now, correct?
It has been for some time. I don't know that I want to go into any details on that about how far along they are, but let's just say it's not as fast as they would have wished for.
Sure.
Especially with all the turnover within the company.
Yeah.
But this whole idea, as I wrote on LinkedIn, the Amazon approach of get big fast, that's no longer a viable business model if you can't retain customers and have the margins needed to be profitable.
Yeah.
So a problem.
Yeah, I've seen some comments, you know, from industry folks, and I think they're either missing a little bit, you know, what was said here is that because I've seen industry people, you know, kind of focusing on like the technology, the streaming, the encoding aspect, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I wonder how Disney is behind or in what way is Netflix ahead, or, you know, there's a few debates there and it's all conjecture, but really what he's saying it's a little bit confusing because he talks about the video tech stack. And so that would imply like video encoding, packaging, you know, all the things we think about, right? But ultimately what he's saying is it's the analytics, it's the data acquisition systems around,
it's all of that.
In other words, it's I'm
sure the recommendation engine.
The recommendation engine, exactly. And then you think like, what was it? Oh, it was 12, 13, 14 years ago when Netflix had that competition where they were giving
$1 million prize.
I mean, they've been working and if you go do it's I haven't done it recently, but a while back I search Netflix on LinkedIn, you know, employees, and you look at those with like, you know, data in their title, or, you know, data analyst, or
behavioral specialists.
Yeah, those kinds of people. There are so many people that Netflix has. Now, I haven't done that for Disney, so who knows? Maybe they also have hundreds, but
no, it's not nearly as deep.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But the point, you know, that I'm trying to make, or at least highlight here, is that, you know, for anybody who's kind of just only focused on like, well, yeah, you know, Disney needs to rebuild their tech stack. You know, they're, you know, need to do a better job on the encoding, streaming, the traditional architecture of how a streaming system works. Maybe they do, maybe not. We're not here to say, you know, one way or the other, but that's not what the CEO is really saying here, you know?
Yeah, those tech pieces, look, nobody did a better job with building microservices at scale. That's what we're talking about here. And I could go into a lot of details in the Disney side. I won't, but just think about just Open Connect.
Yeah.
Right? Netflix made a decision early on in the business, right? We want to control the delivery, not because of cost, but because we can control QoE and quality. We think that's a factor.
Right. Yes.
So it's in their DNA.
Yeah.
Right. That's something they decided to do. That's not something that Disney ever from a high level was like, invested in that.
That's right.
And just the way they optimized encoding. But also look at Netflix's tech blog.
Yeah.
Look at how much information they have shared over the last 10 years on how they've built services at scale with quality. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it ties into the data you're talking about, which then ties into how do we make better business decisions on retention? Mm-hmm. What I also find interesting, Mark, that I was thinking is for all the success Netflix has had and all the grief they've taken from people in the industry, think of what Netflix has never done. They've never discounted their service.
That's right.
Ever. I can't remember a single time Netflix has ever discounted their service. Yeah, ever. No. And they don't allow you to pay a year in advance.
Yeah.
And get a discount.
And get a discount. Yeah.
And yet, look at their business compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
And for many years, what did the industry say? Oh, well, if you can't bundle, if you can't discount, if you can't offer, like Disney, you'll have a problem in the market.
Yeah. Like,
really?
Netflix is dead because they're not bundling. They're going to be left out in the cold. Yeah. They're not discounting.
Discount is what people have talked to. So that's not the case.
I think, I think again, you're making a really, really good point about just the architectural choices that Netflix has made. And I'll put another kind of exclamation point on what you're really saying is that this was over now. Well, you can almost say decades. Because I mean, this work began 15 years ago. Now, you know, it's true that, you know, maybe 10 years ago is when, you know, like Open Connect was really starting to be built out and all. But I mean, in other words, this was done over a very, very, very long period of time. And there was a lot of iterations and there was a lot of version 1 and version 2 and version 3. And it's not to say that Disney or anybody else can't come to market with a competitive solution, but this isn't a matter of we need to choose this vendor over this other vendor or this technology or this other technology. And in 18 months, Disney's going to be there, you know, and let's even take Disney out, anybody else. This is over a long period of time that it took them to build out this incredible platform.
At scale.
Exactly.
Which no one ever says at scale. That's like, we can build this out. And it's like, you have 2 million subs.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't even compare yourself to Netflix. But the Disney side, you know, Mark, Disney can't build this out to scale with the quality. And the reason is it's not 100% of the company's focus, right? I mean, they're dealing with activist investors. They're dealing with board problems right now. They're dealing with all these other corporate issues.
There's a lot of headwinds, right?
That take time and away from your focus.
Yeah.
So Disney has their work cut out for them. We're seeing some progress, obviously, on the volume, the amount of money that they're losing in D2C, right? It's improving, but they still have a long way to go. Yeah. And if you really want to understand what's going on with Disney, so Trian Partners published a 130-page white paper revealing what they would do to fix Disney if their founder, Nelson Peltz, and fellow nominee Jay Roluso were elected to Disney's corporate board.
Yeah.
It is the best breakdown I've ever seen, ever, of Disney's business, not just D2C, but overall. Mm-hmm. And it is full of just factual numbers. Here's what's taken place, right? Disney's lost over $14 billion on D2C streaming to date. Mm-hmm. We know that. But it includes such a detailed breakdown, and here's things that need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating how many times they bring up, you know, 5 years ago, Disney said this. They warned investors of threats that Netflix and D2C posed to their linear TV business. Mm-hmm. They say for a decade, but what have they done to change their linear TV business in that decade they were warning investors? Nothing. Mm-hmm. They're only looking at it now. They also, interestingly enough, are another one that highlights that no agreement has been signed with the three companies in the JV Sports deal, only that they have reached or agreed upon principal terms, as they call it.
Principal terms, yeah.
But the other thing that they really highlight a lot is, like, you know, Disney keeps doing a lot of press releases about stuff they're going to do.
Yeah.
But it's stuff that doesn't exist in the market today. So what is the true impact? Well, once it comes out, think of the Epic Games deal. We can't judge the actual success of anything that launches for, I would argue, multiple years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially since Murdoch has said it's going to take 5 years to get 5 million. So what they're saying in their report too is, Disney, at least with someone on Wall Street, is getting a lot of, oh, look, they, you know, they're making great changes, like announcing this JV Sports deal. Mm-hmm. Well, they've announced it, but it's not existing in the market today. We don't know that it's positive. We don't know that it'll be profitable.
Yeah.
It's a lot of unknowns.
Sure.
And I think they're right in that regard. There's also just, it's interesting, the not surprising, but the unprofessionalism also between some of the executives who are fighting over these board seats in the report. But the report overall is as detailed as you could get. You can see it on LinkedIn in my post about Disney, where I highlighted a few things from the report. But to really read through this, you need to spend 2 hours.
Yeah, I wish I had time to.
I did. It was too fascinating not to.
Yeah. No, well, that's why I say I wish I had time, because, you know, legitimately, I have heard you reported that it's really a good read. It's a good analysis. And but I've, you know, I've read some other reports.
And I love it's based on facts.
Same. Yeah.
And exactly. It also ties in, hey, like, here's what the stock did. And yet the board's being compensated with all these crazy bonuses. Like, how does this make sense? So some of it is, this is our opinion based on the facts, but they're at least providing all factual numbers, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, for sure.
So check that out on LinkedIn if you want. Two other things, Mark, here, and we'll bounce. AWS announced they're starting, this month.
This is
they're waiving data transfer fees out of the internet exchanges when customers want to move their data outside of AWS. Now, I thought this was very interesting because it's on the heels of what Google announced, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Amazon came out and says that 90% of their customers already incur no data transfer expenses out of AWS to begin with. I thought that was interesting because you hear a lot of customers complain about it. And yet, if Amazon's number is right, 90% aren't paying a fee already. Well, now nobody will pay a fee.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, this comes on the heels of Google announcing in January that Google Cloud customers who wanted to stop using Google Cloud and migrate their data to another provider or go on-prem could take advantage of free network data transfer to migrate their data out of Google Cloud. So Google's the one who actually kind of started this. It's good to see Amazon follow suit, but it doesn't sound like this was already impacting a lot of Amazon customers to begin with.
Yeah, it's interesting how perception, you know, I just wonder how much is perception that drives, you know, oh, it's so expensive, the penalties, you know, to move off AWS. Right. And people are, you know, they're saying it as if they're this massive company with, well, it's more than 100 gigabytes. But it looks like previously, if you had 100 gigabytes or less than 100 gigabytes, it was free anyway.
Right.
Right.
You're so, right. Perception is everything.
So perception, you know, it's a little bit, I think about after the HEVC licensing debacle got solved, which has now been many years, like five, six years now. It's very well defined. I still occasionally run into somebody who says, oh, we're really concerned about HEVC royalties.
Royalties.
I'm like, really? Like that's solved. Oh, it is. But it's a perception
can be, you know, reality, especially in cloud costs, everybody wanting to do more with less.
That
doesn't surprise me. Final thing here, Mark, is I've talked to quite a few people, probably six or seven people in the last week looking for jobs in the market. Interesting how many executives right now are reaching out who were SVP, EVP of Paramount, Hulu, AMC, you name it, and they're looking for jobs. Interesting time in the market. But a couple things right off the bat. If you're looking for a job, I can't believe how many people are saying, well, no, I didn't let anyone know I'm looking on LinkedIn because, you know, everyone says that's a bad thing to do. I don't know who you're listening to, but stop. Whatever idiots you're listening to, like or recruiters or whatnot that says you should not tell people you're looking for a job, they don't know what they're talking about in the market.
Yeah.
The amount of people who have not, I mean, the number one, this is common sense. The number one person who's going to help you find a job is someone in the industry who has a connection, who's going to vouch for you.
Yeah.
But you're not even telling your connections and your network on LinkedIn that you're even looking for a job. Well, why would they offer you one?
Yeah.
So for anyone who keeps hearing from somebody, well, I heard or someone told me like you shouldn't, because people keep saying to me, well, it makes me look desperate. Why does it make you look desperate? There's been so many layoffs in the space. You didn't do anything wrong. You got laid off.
Yeah.
You also are competing against a lot of people out there, which means you need to showcase your skills.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
When it looks like you still work at a company and you don't, it also looks like you're too lazy to update your LinkedIn page.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to comment on what you just said there, Dan, because I have noticed a trend, and I've recently been in some interview situations where I was talking to potential candidates and, you know, and I'm talking to them, I'm starting to ask them questions as if they're still there. And I find out not only are they not still there, which fundamentally is okay, but it's not okay when they haven't been there for 6 months.
Right, right.
You know, it's like,
and what is your resume? There's no link to it. Like, so it just doesn't make sense to me.
All of a sudden, there's red flags of, you know, to be frank, of even like honesty, like, what are you trying to hide? Like, what, you know? So,
well, here's the reason I bring this up, Mark, is I'm going to do the last session of the day and day two of the NAB Streaming Summit for an hour. Mm. I'm now going to dedicate 30 minutes of that to getting a job.
That's
and I'm going to go through LinkedIn, the resume, kind of like the webinar I did, like, because this is just insane what I keep seeing. And people are listening to those without experience.
Yeah.
Right. Remember, it's not the class. It's the instructor that matters. And people are listening to people who don't have the experience. So I'm going to post some information on that to LinkedIn soon. But it's one of the reasons I bring it up. All right, Mark, let's bounce. I'm on 1% here in my MacBook. So we're going to end this podcast whether we want to or not in a minute.
That's right.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week. If you have questions, reach out to Mark and I. We're available to you at any time. Hope everyone has a good week. Stay safe. If you want a discount code to the Streaming Summit, reach out to me as well. I'll provide that to you. Thanks very much.
If you enjoyed the show, send it to a friend. Have questions for Dan or Mark? Connect with them on LinkedIn at any time. And be sure to check out Dan's blog at streamingmediablog.com.